Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for taking the time to come this morning. Thank you for taking the time to come last night. Let's learn together. It's been a very special weekend. I want to start off by thanking Marilyn and Elliot Lauer, who are sponsoring today's shiur, Le'ilu Nishmas, the yahrzeit this evening of Marilyn's mother, Yehudis Liba Bas Simcha HaKohen, which is on Tu B'Shvat. This is the second yahrzeit, a woman who created a huge amount in this world. And the creations continue through her namesakes now, or namesake? Namesake. Mitzvah Hashem, God willing, there will be many, many more who will continue to lead in the example she set. Be'ezras Hashem. I want to also thank Chaya and Josh Glickman, who are sponsoring this morning for the eighth yahrzeit of Chaya's father, Shlomo ben Pesach David Alav Shalom. Chaya told me last night, or the other night, that he was a person who really enjoyed learning Torah, and that is evident in the children. And it's a shame that should continue for many generations to come. So let us learn this morning. We are in the cusp of Tu B'Shvat. Today is Yud Daled Shvat. There are a few more printing right now as it goes, so there will be hopefully a few more coming out. We are learning about the festival of the trees, and there's just one basic question, that is, how did it turn from what seems to be a halachic date into a simcha date? Meaning there's so much we hear about Tu B'Shvat today and a Seder Tu B'Shvat and all these wonderful things. But if you go back to the sources, that's not really what it was to start off with. We're going to do a little bit of a background, some of the ideas which are somewhat familiar, and then perhaps into one idea which we can trace a little further. So here's how it goes. We know that the Mishnah tells us a very fascinating halacha, at the beginning of the very, very beginning of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, tells us about Tu B'Shvat. Here's how it goes. The Mishnah tells us, Arba'a Roshei Shanim Hei. There's four Rosh Hashanahs. Be'echad B'Nisan, on the first of Nisan, Rosh Hashanah Limalachim V'Liragalim. It's the beginning of the year for kings and for festivals. What does it mean for kings? Their birthday? What does that mean, folks? So that means, when you count the years, right? The years are counted to the king. So when did you denote the beginning of the counting of the year for the king would be Nisan. So if a king had got coronated on the 29th of Adar, that means to say it's already year two when it comes to Nisan, because that is the second year. Just though we have to have some demarcation as an example. The next thing the mission tells us, Be'echad Be'elo, Rosh Hashanah L'Maaser Behema. So there would be the first of Elul, not Tishrei, the first of Elul, a month before the beginning of the year, would be the Rosh Hashanah for the demarcation between different years of taking Maaser on animals. Rabbi Elazar, that means when they were born, when the animals were born. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Omrim, Be'echa, B'Tishrei, Be'echa, B'Tishrei. Some of them said it was a month later in Tishrei. But everybody agrees, Be'echa, B'Tishrei, the third of the Rosh Hashanah is the one that we know, Rosh Hashanah, L'Shanim, L'Shmitim, L'Yovlos, L'Natia, L'Yorakos. That's the one where it is the Rosh Hashanah for many of these agricultural cycles, including Shmita. Shmita always begins at Rosh Hashanah. Be'echad b'Shvat, on the first of Shvat, Rosh Hashanah l'Ilan, k'divrei Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, Omrim b'chamisha asar boy, and there's a dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel whether the Rosh Chodesh for Ilanos, the Rosh Hashanah l'Ilanos, is going to be on the first or the 15th of Shvat. For those who are here, just a few years ago, we went through the Shvat debate as to why it is that there's a dispute between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about these two dates. What's the 15-day difference between these two? Very fascinating subject in and of itself, not for now. So this is what we're told. Okay, what is interesting to note, first of all, in this Mishnah, is that not all agriculture has its birthday on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Happens to be, in fact, there's probably more agricultural cycles tied to the first of Tishrei than there are to B'Shvat or Rosh Chodesh Shvat, just to be aware of that as number one. So it's not, you know, every time you go out to your vegetable patch or it's specifically Ilanos. And it's not Ilanos with regard to Shmita, it's Ilanos with regard to, the Mishnah doesn't tell us necessarily. The Gemara does. So the Gemara explains what is really going on here. What's the dynamics? What's the mechanics of this? So the Gemara tells us a number of daf later on, do your dadadam and aleph. Be'echad b'shvad Rosh Chodesh Rosh Hashanah le'ilan. The Gemara says in the second source, my time I'm Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Oishia. Hoyel v'yatsu rav gishmei shana. So most of the rain in the year has already exhausted themselves, but it's still in the roi, and the roif tekufa is not finished yet. What does a tekufa mean? When you see the word tekufa in the Gemara, It means season. It's funny. The word tekufa sometimes means time. A tekufa in the Gemara means a season. And there are four seasons in the year. It moves between solstice to equinox and equinox to solstice. And we are now in between the winter solstice and the spring equinox. That's essentially where we are. And it always falls out that way, right? And that's what the Gemara is saying. In a certain sense, we've finished the rain, but we're not finished the season, as the Gemara is saying it. And therefore, what does that mean? We're getting there because most of the rain has exhausted itself. What does that mean? Rashi tells us on the top of the next page, this is the Rashi on this Gemara. Shekvar ova roiv yomoysa geshamim, shuzman revia. So because most of the rain has exhausted itself from this season, now therefore it will allow the growth process to start. Now, I don't know about you, and I am a Trump, and I'm making an observation, but when I went outside just as earlier this week, and you look at the trees, there are already buds forming. Right now, it happens to be, it may be related to other things which might not really exist, like global warming, we don't know. But there are right now, if you go outside and you look at the trees right now, there are buds already forming in the trees. Right now, of course, this Gemara is really essentially established in the Middle East, right? So the Mishnah in Eretz Yisrael and the Talmud Bavli in Babylon are not too far off in the north. But nonetheless, there's very clearly a reflection which is there, even though it's pretty chilly outside. And that's because that the rain's now finished, the growth process has now begun. In other words, a new growth cycle has started, says Rashi. Tosafot says it ever so slightly different in the Gemara over there. Tosafot says in the underlined section, V'chol hachanutim koidim nizman hazeh, hainu al gishmei shana shilifnei tishrei. The way that Tosafot says it is that all the growth that happened beforehand was relying on the rains that came from before Tishrei. Is that interesting meaning? If you think about it, that there was earlier rain in before really the real what's the real demarcation says Tosafot, the real demarcation is really is Tishrei, but the growth process from Tishrei has now continued up to this point, and now we can say definitively that the rains from beforehand have stopped, which is strange a little bit because in Eretz Israel there's no rain, so it's not clear is Tosafot referring to a different climate as an example, or we would talk about Northern France, potentially, perhaps, just as out of interest. But what he's saying is, his understanding is that therefore we can demarcate a difference between the indicator, Rosh Chodesh Shvat is an indicator of the real Rosh Hashanah, which is Tishrei, which is where all the other agricultural cycles belong, which actually is a fascinating book to open if you're thinking about this, because what happens in your country is where you know that's not the case. So for instance, the Har Tzvi, Ratzi Pesach Frank, asks the following question. What about if I'm living in Argentina, right, where the rain cycle is completely different? Do I say that there may be another demarcation or not? Fascinating, depending on whether I understand like Rashi or like Tosafot. Tosafot says it really was, when was the real Rosh Hashanah? Tishrei. But the effects of the last year are still in effect, whereas Rashi says no, the Rosh Hashanah really is on Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Fascinating topic in and of itself. Tosafot is generally not the predominant view over here. We adopt Rashi that it is actually Rosh Hashanah is actually on in Shvat, whether it be the first of Shvat or the 15th of Shvat. What does it actually look like? So what nafkamina, what halacha actually exudes from this? The Gemara goes on to say this on the next Amud. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, I'm on the second side of the blatt, which is in source 5. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, I'm liket esrog erev tu bishvat. So you pick an esrog on Erev Tushra. That means today, folks, right? So you pick an esrog today. Now, walk around the five towns. There's no esrog available right now. You have to go to L.A., right, to do this. We need a little bit of a different climate. So if I have... if I have one esrog from today and one esrog from tomorrow, essentially I'm in different tax years. So I'm not able to bring trumois or maestrois from one onto the other, which makes a whole lot of sense. Meaning to say, in any tax year, you have to have a demarcation. Right? So if I'm going to make a charitable donation, and we all get those emails, folks, right? It's the 29th of December. Redeem your credit. make a donation. Finish up your tzedakah account. Why are we inundated with those emails in the last 2 weeks of December? Is because should we make the donation at 11:59:33 on December 31st, 2019, that will still count as a tax credit towards 2019. Do it 40 seconds later, and it now counts as 2020. And it makes sense. You have to have some line which differentiates two tax years. And that same thing over here. Maestros of year A and maestros of year B are demarcated when? It's now at the beginning and the end of Tu B'Shvat, essentially. That is, as we enter into Tu B'Shvat, is the time. And in fact, the Gemara actually says, Al Dasha Tavaya Shemesh, the sundown, which means this evening. So around about, just after, around about 5:20 this evening is the time. And what's the demarcation the Gemara also makes? It's not planting, but necessarily, but picking, likate, is the demarcation between the Maaser and a Maaser and Trumois, which is fascinating. So again, if we come back to Rosh Hashanah of the previous description in the Mishnah of all the other agricultural cycles, they were Shmitim, Yovlos, Natia, and Yerakos. That is not regarding Truma and Maaser. Yes.
Does that come for our Maaser today?
Good question. Yes. So today Maaser is a little more complicated because we don't have the ability to be able to give our Trumas and Maasers to people. But yes, the same cycle would apply. Yes. Paskin in the Rambam. So, the Shulchan Aruch doesn't paskin Trumas and Maestros per se because it is not Nogea.
Good question.
That's a good question. I don't remember. The Chofetz Chaim in Avas Chesed has a whole two chapters on Maaser Ksofim. I believe it is the same around now. I don't know if it is because it's not an agricultural cycle. Anyways, be it as it may. This is what the Gemara tells, which means to say this is a very practical date. Right, we need to know about this date for very practical reasons. But the funny thing is, so why the celebration? Right now, I know that there's something called Tax Day, right, Kalman? April 15th for individual taxes, right? So we can all make a party about that. Actually, the CPAs will make a party about that. But my wife's a CPA. My wife worked in public for a good long time. I don't know how. She's now in private. But that's Tax Day for the accountants. But, you know, it's strange. Who has a tax day on the day of, you know, December 31st going into January 1st? The ball is not dropping because of taxes. that's not the reason. Right, so why are we celebrating a day which seems to be just simply a legal date? And we see the emergence of this as a holiday over time. It's fascinating. Here are some of the Makoros which relates to this. So as an example, Rabbeinu Gershom, we're talking about now, almost 1,000 years ago, Rabbeinu Gershom says the following. He was asked in his response, so remember he lived at the time of the Goyim, and the main literature we have, the main works of the Goyim that we have actually are responsum. We have their questions and answers. We have here and there, we have Rabbeinu Gershom as a pirush in the Gemara, the Rif as a pirush on the halachic pirush in the Gemara, but there's the Sheiltos. But generally speaking, it's mostly responsum from all over the Jewish world. Here's what he suggests. V'shisha altami says, you have asked tzivu shibiksu ligzar tanis sheni v'chamishi v'sheni. So there's a community that was going through whatever tribulation that it was going through. It decided we need to have a fast day. How do we respond to tzaros, to difficulties? We fast, we daven. So it was literally the constellation of this year. And the first of the Mondays, Monday, Thursday, Monday, that they would put as a fast day would be tomorrow, which would be Tu B'Shvat. So they said, do you push aside this institution of the Ta'anis or not? He says, Kach da'ati noite, she Ta'anis nidche l'shabbos haba, v'ein koivin ha-Ta'anis boi, d'lo matzino Ta'anis b'Rosh Hashanah klal. It's an interesting question. Does it have any import beyond its capacity as a legal date? And the answer, he says, is yes. Because all these Rosh Hashanah have something special about them. So it is better to start the fast cycle next week, Monday, rather than starting this Monday, thereby fasting on Rosh Hashanah itself, with Rosh Hashanah in on us. So here you see the movement beyond, a little bit above, what we'll say is simply a legal demarcation. The question we have to ask is always, why? Another example. This is a You're right, exactly. That's a very good point. Paul's raising a fascinating point. Is the other ones anyway that have a Rosh Chodesh with them? This is the only one you could really even ask the question in the first place. And if the question can be asked, it will be asked, and it is. So this is what he says. Fascinating. That's the way it is possible. Another way to think about this is the Magen Avraham, teaches us on Shulchan Aruch. He quotes the Sefer, so I feel it's appropriate to read the actual Sefer Tzad, Tikkun Yisachar. I believe we're going down to the 1700s. He says at the last line of Source 7, the second last line, there's a little bit of a period area in the middle of his sentence. He says, Ashkenazim, he says, Minhagim laharbois by the minim peros, ilonos lekovoid, shmoy shal yam. He says that he has noticed that Ashkenazi Jews serve different types of fruit in honor of the day. So again, and this is quoted on the side of the Shulchan Aruch as well, in the Magen Avraham, it's not just about necessarily when I plant, when I pick, what is going to be taxed in Maaser and Truma from one to the year to the other. It is in fact also something about honoring the day with eating. Interesting, serving fruits. We see something else which is emerging. And in fact, there emerged a very fascinating and elaborate Seder Tu Bishvat, which emerged. It has a little bit of a murky background. It appeared originally in a Sefer called Chemdas Yomim, which was complicated because it was attributed to a Sabbatean movement originally, which is why there was a complication back to it. But nonetheless, at the same time, what is interesting is there were many Sorim put out on it. One is called Priyat Sadarim. If you read it inside, it's a whole Seder. You should read about this. It's just remarkable. Who's ever been to a Seder Tu Bishvat? Anybody here been? It's really something worthwhile going to. Okay, this means we in the shul need to do this, right? Okay, so we need to do this. It really is quite something. I mean, take a look. Here's a transcription of some of this. Is in the Sefer Amor Adim, transcription from the Priyat Sadar. Priyat Sadar usually refers to the Esrog, but this book is specifically focused upon the Seder Tu Bishvat. There are four cups, right? If you can look at over here, this is a little bit of a, you know, there's a Chita, Zayis, Tamarim, the Metaina, Rimon, Esrog, and Tapuach. And what do you say in each of the cups? There's a certain psukim a person says, there's a mishnah a person. It's a whole seder, right? It's a whole business. It's an elaborate business. Kabbalistically, machshavically, very, very fascinating emergence of the Seder Tu Bishvat. The question is why? What's going on over here? How did this suddenly move from being a primarily legal date in the Mishnah to being something more? By the way, we've seen this in other places in Judaism as well. As an example, we see like days like Hoshana Rabbah, which is really essentially the end of the time that we need Donim Alamayim, the 7th days of Sukkot, emerging as a Kabbalistic holiday much later than the times of the Mishnah. It appears in other sources, but we see the emergence of these festivals in this way. What is behind this? So there are many ideas behind it. And what a lot of people will often quote is the idea, the parallel between the poetic parallel. The Torah says, Ki Adam Eitz HaSodeh, the person is like the tree of the field. Where does the Torah say that, by the way? Anybody familiar with the background of where that is said?
Siege of a city.
Siege of a city. Fantastic. When you're laying siege on a city, don't destroy its trees, the fruit trees. Al Tashchis, Bal Tashchis comes from that. So why? Ki Adam Eitz HaSodeh. And there are many elaborate understandings of what that means. Meaning to say that we can exhume from that, a very, very a very powerful connection between the way the person grows, the need for water, metaphorically, Torah. There's a lot of ideas like that. That's very much focused upon the individual. I'd like to focus upon one idea, which I think is so remarkable and is very much relevant to today. There's so much more, but this is one idea, which is an idea which perhaps was converted or utilized negatively and perhaps illegitimately over the centuries. Rav Hirsch talks about this. Now remember, when did Rav Hirsch live? Just to put this into perspective. Right, so Rav Hirsch lived in the 1800s in Germany. Right, so let's just put that in context. He lived in at a time when there was rampant movement towards the reform movement. And he was essentially the barrier. He was essentially one of the barriers between the traditional Jewish camp and finding meaning in the traditional Jewish camp and rabbinic Judaism. And not throwing it out of the window, unlike the surrounding society. And here's what he says in his collected writings. In the collected writings, Rav Hirsch has a whole section where he talks about the festivals. It's very, very beautiful, very worthwhile, it's very accessible. Usually we only have access to Rav Hirsch on the Chumash, which is itself remarkable, but sometimes we miss the collected writings, it's many volumes. In volume 2, this is what he says about Tu Bishvat. What we're going to do is in source 8, I'm going to start off on the bottom of the second column, the left-hand side of the first column by the section where it says, hunted like wild animals. Listen to this poetic description of how he views Tu Bishvat. Just so powerful. Remember, we're in Germany right now. Hunted like wild animals, herded into ghettos, driven into our humble homes or into the modest walls where we could devote ourselves to religious contemplation, we seem to the superficial observer to be leading a joyless and unsociable life. We stepped into the public eye and showed signs of activity only in the marketplace and in business and industrial life. But people did not look among the Jews for fresh, pulsating life, drawing strength and joy from the breasts of nature. The truth was that the Jew had been forcibly driven into this painful condition, and the Jewish spirit and the spirit of Judaism were blamed for what was nothing but a fictitious product of brutal repression. Isn't that a brilliant sentence? We became who we are forced to become, not who we are. How utterly different is the spirit of Judaism, where it can unfold itself freely. It transports us into the open country, where the brooks trickle and the meadows bloom, where the seeds ripen and the trees blossom and the herds pasture, where man exercises his power in close contact with nature and places his exertions immediately under the protection and blessing of God. Nature meant us to be men of the fields and flocks. The goddess has made us into wandering traders. Oh, that we could turn our backs on this occupation, which has been artificially imposed on us. That with our children we might flee away to the simplicity of a country life infused with the divine Jewish spirit. Then would simplicity and peace, temperance and love, humanity and joy, enthusiasm and happiness dwell with us. Isn't that amazing? David's harp would sound again and Ruth would again find the ears of corn on the field of Boaz. It's just a remarkable description. Think about this, the city-dwelling rabbi in Germany talking. It is wonderful how the Jewish nature law continually invites us to the observation of the laws and the ways of nature, and how it is ever leading us from nature to the life of man, and there teaching us to use the products of the soil and bringing to ripeness the still nobler blossoms and fruits to a free human life permeated with the idea of God. So what is happening over here as he comments on Tu B'Shvat? Could it ever be said better than this? Says Rav Hirsch, what's happening on Tu B'Shvat? Is a reminder, Rabbeisai, we're living in the urban lifestyle, we're living in the urban golos that was forced upon us. But you know what? That's not how we were meant to be. We were meant to be there. We were meant to be there out there with the herds, with the flocks. We were meant to be out there in the field in a much healthier version of life. And you know what? I'm going to remind you, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're going to have times where you're reminded about the mitzvahs which now have been forgotten. How does Maaser work today exactly? On what do we take Maaser? Where does the Art Scroll Center even have a Maaser section? They did. They added into the later versions at the back, right? But the first version, they didn't even have Maaser in the Art Scroll Center. Have we forgotten? Or do we not know what our identity is? Where are we supposed to be? That's what Rav Hirsch says. The reminder of Tu B'Shvat is the type of people we're supposed to be. This expresses itself in numerous ways. Here's one fascinating way, which is expressed la halacha. The Nefesh David. Does anybody know who that is? Aderet. Does anybody know who Aderet was? He was the father-in-law of Rav Kook, actually. He for a short time was the Rav in Yerushalayim. Very, very illustrious individual. Rav Tumim, Baruch Tumim. He was a gadol by Yisrael, and here's what he says in his notes. He says, "Bayom chamisha v'sabeshvat l'marti hilchos ma'aser b'sefer Rambam v'gemar roshana yudalet v'hala v'chazarti lechadesh davar ma kafi erki v'yechashuv kekiyam mitzvos ma b'ma'aser ilan v'spalalti la'ashem shizakeni ba'osam mitzvah b'poyal ma'mesh min haTorah." What did I do on Tu B'Shvat? I whipped out this Gemara. I started learning about it. When I started learning the Rambam in Hilchos Maaser, because I wanted to daven to Hashem that He should allow me to be the kind of person who can take Trumas and Maestros, who can live the life of the land once again and be able to perform that. Again, the same idea, the yearning. What does Tu B'Shvat mean? The yearning back to that form, to that model of life. Now, what is interesting is that over the years, it is funny that it's almost as if Tu B'Shvat has been co-opted by the secular Zionist state to a certain degree, because this presented the great icon of exactly what the Mitnachlim were doing. You have these individuals coming from Europe, leaving the ghetto, leaving the pale in Russia, moving to the land and rolling up their sleeves and getting into the mud of the swamps and draining the swamps and making that. And therefore you'll see Tu B'Shvat becoming this icon. And ironically, it is exactly what Rav Hirsch was saying, but devoid of the religious content, devoid of the Nefesh David's point of the whole idea. And that's what you'll see. Just fascinating. I included just a few pictures. These are secular Zionist pictures, as you will see them, of Tu B'Shvat. And there are poems, and there are songs, and there are books written about it, about the children who are going to plant trees. Now, folks, planting trees wasn't what Tu B'Shvat is about necessarily, right? Right? It's about the maestros. How do we treat the agriculture? How are we melding with it in a spiritual sense? But it became the idea of planting trees, and the JNF had a fantastic campaign, and we should plant as many, many trees as we possibly can. But these are examples of it. In fact, on the top of page 6, I put in over here, this is a little children's book called Amichai Noteya. Amichai Somech V'gam Atzuv. Amichai is a little boy. He's sad and he's happy. And it goes on, Lama Hu Somech. And it goes on to explain. And there's this story about him and his opportunity to plant his tree. And then he becomes happy. And it's interesting. This is actually a quote over here I found in the Sefer Mo'adim of David Ben Gurion. And he says, listen to his description of this. And he was a very complex, very, very thoughtful individual. He says, "Mikol ha'maasim ha'muvurachim she'anachnu osim be'eretz hazot, of all the great things we do, the most blessed things we do in this land," he says, "Einenu yodea im yesh mifal pora yoter v'asher totzah tov kam kob mo'ilot k'notzias etzim." He says, "I don't think there's anything more productive than actually planting trees. Ha'etzim osim yofi l'nof ha'aretzenu. They add to the beauty of our land." They add health, because it's the work of their hands. And he's right. And in fact, today, if you go to Judah and Samaria and you see the tree lines and the fights between the olive trees of the Arabs and the JNF trees, the lines which form the battlefront, this is a very serious battle. We should not underappreciate what is being said over here. At the same time, what is happening over here is almost, in a certain sense, the extreme of what Rav Hirsch was saying. Meaning, Rav Hirsch was saying is, let's remember who we are, let's return to land. And when the Israel to return to land, some of the spark of those Jews, which perhaps may have lost its religious spark, still had this spark, which was this aspect of Tu B'Shvat, which became ultimately, and therefore, the religious community rejects that. But at a core, this is actually an expression of something very deep and very holy. Rav Kook was asked about this. So the education department in Jerusalem sent a question to Rav Kook, and they said to him, no, so should we be educating our kids about the planting of trees? Because what was essentially happening is now this new icon, this new icon of planting trees now became a question, does it have any religious value? That was the question that Rav Kook was asked. And, you know, so today, if you ask many, the Rabbanim, they'll just say, treif, out of the window, has no value whatsoever. So Rav Kook, listen to the complexity of his response. This is in source 10, as we go over onto page 7. Just to sense the sensitivity and also the complexity of his answer. He's talking to the Istadrut HaMorim and the Mo'atzah. So he's talking about the education department in Jerusalem who asked him. And he said the following. This is a Gimel Shvat. Can you see the date? The Gimel Shvat Taf Resh Pei Dalet. So we are talking now, essentially 96 years ago. So this we're talking about 1916, essentially, right? If we put this into dates, right? We're at Taf Shin Pei. This is Taf Resh Pei Dalet. So this is 96 years ago, 1916. At this point in time, he is not the Rav of Yerushalayim. That was in 1920. He was the Rav of Yafo and the Yeshuvim. And he was asked the following question. He says, "Eschabed baze la'ir es ruach kvoidam bedavar aminag ha'kasher v'yofe hanahug etzeinu b'ir ha'kodesh zor ba'etzeinu ha'kodesha la'asos tiyu klalim ha'talmidim kayom rosh hashana le'ilanos." You know, there's been a practice to take the children out on a school trip and do a tiyul on Tu B'Shvat, Chamisha Asa B'Shvat, V'lintoya Oz Atzei Pri, B'Yichud L'Harboises Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and to plant trees to increase the investment in the settlement of the land of Israel, L'Rameimes Ruach HaTalmidim, B'Yosoy L'Chayim Shel Abinyan HaLu'umi B'Eretz Avois, V'Tzpias Asidoy HaGadol. And in order to strengthen our national entity, and to, in the land of our fathers, and to encourage the hope for a great future. He says, one minor problem is that this year happens to be a Shemitah year. He says, so therefore, Shemin Adin, Royu Mechuyavu. Now notice the way he describes it, just the sensitivity. It's a good idea and it's also an obligation. You open up the Torah, the Holy Bible, it says you shouldn't be planting on such a year. You shouldn't be working in the fields. Because of the terrible and difficult situation that we're living in, many have gathered together. There are many who have gathered together to support what we call the Heter Mechira, which he wrote an entire sefer on. Now, some people say Rav Kook was the one who instituted. He did not institute the Heter Mechira. That was came well before him. It fell on the position of the Rav of Yafo, and the reason it did was because the based in Yerushalayim knew it needed to happen, but they couldn't do it on their own name. They felt that it would be inappropriate for the based in Yerushalayim to do it, so they moved it to the next most important post, which was the old city of Yafo, which was also, the Rav there was the chief rabbi of all the Yishuvim, and Rav Kook inherited that position in 1904, I believe, is when he arrived from Boisk in Eastern Europe. So now, he was saddled with, so what did he do? He saw there was a Heter Mechira because people were starving. The farmers were not making it. So what he did was he worked on it. He made sure that the Heter Mechira was more halachically acceptable, and he wrote an entire book on it. So he's referencing that now. Aval, rak lahachzik as a kiyom utar. But only, that's only allowed in order to survive, to subsist. He says, v'chol ofen lo lita mat'im ha'kacharashim. V'yichu kashenam kol kachach muchrachim l'shelas kiyom. He says, I don't believe that school trips fall into that category necessarily. So therefore he says, okay, I'm pleading with you, asu zeichel shvias. Do some sort of remembrance of this agricultural cycle. And tell them what we're hoping for next year. Just do the teal, b'malach binyan amenu v'artzenu, with the building of our nation and our land. Ad sheyashuvu lanu, oz kol chamudosenu v'kol orach ha'chaim ha'gadol, asher ayinu bo'y le'ois le'mofes b'tevel, until we return to being a sign and symbol of planting our land. V'artzenu kadosha, teida kimei olam, ki yesh lanu bo'olam eretz achas, sheyesh bo shnas shabatzon shabas la'alashem. And know that there's only one land in the world that Hashem cared enough about to tell us not to plant on once every 7 years. Then he says, Zeicher Kodesh Zeh, because of this holy remembrance, Yoramei Mesrach Tzirenu Yekarim. It will actually elevate our children. V'yitein lahem shlamim, Tumuras ha'oineg shalanatia hanuhuga asher nachzik boy b'chol oiz b'shisha shnois avodas oiz. Which should absolutely support all other 6 years, the planting of these trees. Hineni mekaveh shedivorai hayotzim mikerev levovi yikonsu bilvavchem atohor haneman lameinu ulokol kadoshov. You who are faithful to our people and our history, would listen to me. V'neni chosem b'vrachav v'rikshei kavod harav Avram Hakod Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook, as he responds. You see the sensitivity over here. There's halacha. There's what you're trying to achieve. I agree with what you're trying to achieve. I'm not going to dismiss it because it's new. At the same time, it falls within the frameworks of halacha as it is up till now. This is the way that he was able to, so to speak, choreograph to pull back that movement into what it's supposed to be. This expresses itself in numerous ways. Just two stories. One is actually earlier on, just two very powerful stories to say as what this aspect of Tu B'Shvat is that on the bottom of here is actually a beautiful picture based on the writings of Rabbi Binyamin of Tudela. Anybody familiar? It was a wandering Jew who wrote a diary. And he wrote a diary about how he traveled across the world. And he talks about how he is able to find a date which comes from the land of Israel. And he brings it back to the people who are around his table, and he shows them this date, and he opens up a chumash, and he says, when you see this word, when it says Tamar, That's what it is. They'd never seen a date in their lives beforehand, because he was able to go to the land of Israel and bring back what, in fact, was part of the land of Eretz Israel. That's what it means. When you're looking at the fruit, you're looking at the land, you're looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu saying to us, this is where we're meant to be. There's a very beautiful story told of Rav Kook himself. We're learning the Ein Haya on Shabbos afternoon, so I happen to be reading through the biography. It's a very powerful story which is told of Rav Kook, where he was sitting in his office. This is actually a very remarkable, many of the stories are remarkable, but this story is quite something. He's sitting in his office, and he was actually accompanied by Yigal Gal Ezer, who was at that time the assistant director general of the state comptroller. And he was there as a youngster, and the Rav was learning. He was learning in Yerushalayim, and there was a timid knock on the door. And I've heard the story once before. I never knew it was under the auspices of Rav Kook. And he says, come in. And there was a young man, a Taimani, a Yemenite individual. And he just stood by the door. He couldn't really enter. He was very scared. So Rav Kook says, no, come inside, please, my son, come sit down. And he came to the desk, but he couldn't bring himself to sit down. He didn't even look at the Rav. He just had his head down. So he says, my son, what's the problem? What's bothering you? He says, I'm very scared. I have to ask you a question. He says, no, so tell me what the question is. He says, I have to tell you. I've worked for 20 years now in menial labor in the land. I've weeded fields. I've moved rocks. I've dug trenches. I've spent my entire life from morning until late at night, beyond dusk, every day doing this, and I still cannot feed my family. I simply don't have enough food to put on the table. I've been working in this land. He says, can I try going to America where maybe I could make a better living? Maybe I could support my family. And he knew Rav Kook was very strong about Yeshiva Aretz, and it was not easy. It was not easy by any stretch of the imagination. Today we fly in, everything, you know, it's wonderful. Should we have a high-speed train out to Yerushalayim? It was not that. We're talking about rocky fields where nothing was growing. It was so difficult. So Rav Kook listened to this individual. He stands up. And he walks backwards and forwards in front of his bookshelf. And he turns to this young man and he says, shave. He says, sit. And he points to his own seat. This young man almost collapses, you know, sitting in the Rav's seat. He says, sit down. This man comes around the desk and he makes him sit down. And as he sits down, he sits there. And he almost automatically falls asleep. He puts his head down on the table. And he goes to sleep for 5 minutes. He wakes up and the Rav says, what did you see? This is a story which is recorded by the individual who is Yigal Gal Ezer, who is in the room with Rav Kook. The man wakes up, and Rav Kook says, what did you see? He says, I saw the end of my life. I saw that I was making the final passage, and I went to the Kisei HaKavod. I was coming into Shemayim, and as I was sitting there, there was a large scale of justice in front of me, and they were bringing many packages of all kinds of sizes and all kinds of shapes. And I asked them, what are these packages? And he says, they are all my averos. All the misdeeds, all the transgressions, the things I could have been better, the things I said I didn't really know, but I could have. And they were all being put on the side of the scale. He says, and I was looking very scared. And then a wagon came in. And the wagon was carrying another bunch of packages. And in these packages was earth. And he says, and I asked him, what's that? And he says, that's all the earth that you picked up in the land of Israel. Those are all the rocks you removed from those fields. Those are all the weeds you took out. And they put it on the other side of the scale. And Rav Kook smiled at him and he put his hand on his shoulder and he says, I think you received the answer. Don't underestimate. Sometimes we think to ourselves, you know, Tu Bishvat, fruit, you know, music, fruits, dancing circles, that's all wonderful and fine. There's much more to it. And that is a reminder of where we are oriented, where we are supposed to do. There were city builders, they built a Migdal, Bavel, they did all kinds of wonderful things. But at heart, let's remember where we are, where our hearts are. And that's what Rav Hirsch says. Would it be that if we could all pick up our plowshares and return in some way to the land of Israel? That's what we're celebrating this Tu Bishvat. I hope it's a meaningful day. I hope it's an uplifting day. I hope it's a day we get to exercise these halachas. Thank you.